begin our lesson. I hope that you're able to join us. Okay, bye then. Bye. Okay, well, Rita, it's you and me to begin with.
Well,
everybody else has got minds like sieves. Laurie is in the States. So I don't think there's any point even trying to contact her. I have no idea what she's doing. No, she's not online. When she comes back, she'll be able to join us again properly. Right, so, okay, where did we get to?
Lesson three. So I'm very happy to have a private lesson with you, Eutina.
Yeah, we're going to have a private lesson. That's not wonderful.
It's,
I know.
It's excellent.
I'm not sure Tibby's got the book. I think that's also the problem. Mm-hmm. I must get it to her. Anyhow, I'll see her tomorrow. Okay, lesson three. The ultimate aim and purpose of creation. So here, Rabbi Ashlag begins his explanations. He put all his questions right at the very beginning of the book in the first two chapters, and now he's going to start his explanations. In order to understand all these questions and investigations, one strategy is to look at the creation as a process and to examine its end state, which is the ultimate aim of creation. After all, it is not possible to understand any process by examining it while it is still developing. Only by looking at its final outcome can one understand it. This is a very important point. One example that we can look at is a very classic example. If you just saw a man taking a very beautiful piece of cloth, okay, and cutting it up, taking these, you know, huge shears and chopping it up, you'd say, hey, stop what you're doing. You're a vandal. Or, for example, another very good example is if you don't know anything about medicine and you come into a room and you see a man all clothed in green and he takes this big knife and he's about to cut open a person, you think he's going to murder him. All right?
Right.
What you don't know is that he's actually a doctor, he's a surgeon, and he knows exactly what he's doing. And he's actually going to cure him. So in both these situations, you see that when we don't know the purpose for the action, we can very easily misunderstand it. A tailor takes a perfect piece of cloth and then cuts it up. If you do not know the ultimate aim of the tailor, you'd be quite justified in considering the tailor as being either mad or a vandal. Mm-hmm. It is not possible to know the ultimate aim of the tailor if all you see are the separate bits of fabric, or if you see him actually in the action of cutting. To understand any process, you have to know its ultimate aim. In this case, it's to make a garment. Rabbi Ashlag is drawing our attention to the fact that we, like the pieces of cloth, are in the process of creation, and we've not yet reached its completion. Therefore, in order to understand the process that we are in, we need to consider creation's ultimate purpose. 4. Okay, so that's pretty clear, isn't it?
It is clear. The only thing, Edida, is I'm questioning, because we cannot really understand the Creator's ways, can we really understand the purpose? Because the purpose is His. It's his original thought, but we don't know him, and we only can understand him by trying to basically observe what is happening in our world. Can we really know the purpose?
That is a brilliant question, Rita. I just wish that the others were here, because that is such a good question. The truth of the matter is that as ordinary human beings, we can't really. I mean, if we look around the world and we see the dreadful mess that it's in, and we see the dreadful suffering of so many thousands of millions of people, how can you look at that and say, well, you know, that we know the purpose? We it's very hard for us. But there have been, and there are people who are great tzaddikim. That means that they are in affinity. Oh, good, Leah's joining us. Super, Leah, wonderful. Yisha koach. Okay, right. Well, I can't hear you, but I know you're there. So I've been wonderful, great people, tzaddikim, who've been in affinity of form with God. Like, they've actually attained, in some sense, an understanding of the consciousness that is God. And they, from them, we know what the purpose of creation is. And they say that the purpose of creation is to do good to the created beings.
May I ask you?
Yeah.
Have you been in the presence of such a person? And what do you feel in the presence of such a person who has affinity with God?
Well, I have to say, I've never been in the presence of a person who of a tzaddik in that sense. At least I don't think so. But from the very beginning that I first came across the work of Rabbi Ashlag, I felt tremendous light and love coming from his work in the most extraordinary way. Something that I've never, ever encountered. Suddenly, my whole life became illuminated, and I became like totally amazed. I can't really describe it. It was like this tremendous light, and that's really never left me. I mean, especially when I learned the Perush HaSulam, when I learned his commentary on the Zohar, which I try to do some every day. I feel incredible clarity and beauty, and but more than anything else, I feel the tremendous love pouring from him. It is an incredible thing, and
Ijida?
Yeah.
Something is happening.
I think it's Leah. All right, and Vita just asked a very important question. Okay, she asked an incredible question. We were talking about that we can't actually understand what the process of creation is, okay, whilst we're in the process of it. And in order to understand it, we need to know what is the creation's ultimate purpose. And she pointed out the fact that since we're ordinary human beings, when we look around the world, it's very difficult for us to know what is the creator's purpose in the creation, because we don't know the creator. We don't have any awareness of the creator. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so I said, well, the tzaddik, somebody who's a tzaddik, somebody who's got actual affinity of form, actual equivalence with God in that sense, is actually able to understand, have actually awareness or really hasaga. It's more like a seeing. He's actually able to see what the purpose of creation is. And Vita asked me, do I actually know of any rabbi, any tzaddik like that? Have I ever met one? And the answer is, I don't think so, but I definitely feel that with Rabbi Ashlag without any question of a doubt whatsoever. There is an. They found some tapes of audio tapes of him when he was in his last years of his life, giving shiurim lessons on the Zohar, and they're actually on YouTube, and I can find you a link to them. And what is amazing, it doesn't matter if you don't understand them. What is amazing is his voice. I have never heard a voice like it in my life. It is the most incredible voice. Let me find the link to it. One second. His voice, I find his voice, I mean, it's full of joy. Incredible joy. Let me find it. I think it's here.
Gida, my Skype is working very in a strange mode. I am afraid to touch it because if I touch it, I might completely lose the connection. I won't be able to reconnect. For some funny reason, the voice is still working. The audio is still working.
That's all right,
So,
just to have audio, don't have anything. So long as you can have audio,
yes.
that's all you need.
If I may ask you, please, can you email me these links?
Yeah,
Because
sure, definitely.
my Skype is blocked right now. I won't be able even be able to see your instant messaging.
Don't worry about it.
But I'm very much interested. I want to hear his voice.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I'll send it to you after the class.
Thank you very,
Okay,
very
that's
much.
not a problem.
Thank you.
I can do that. All right, no problem. I'll send to you also, Leah. It's most amazing if you listen to these tapes. You hear his voice so clear. I never heard a voice like it in my life. And we actually know the process of creation from the great Kabbalist,
Tidy up the
Rabbi
room, clean
Arian,
the dishes, do
who was
something.
the
Help me.
Kabbalist in Svat. And there was and from the they actually able to see the purpose of creation. They're actually able to grasp the purpose of
Find a
creation.
book to read, but don't hang around
Okay.
here. Ijida?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm just afraid always that that you cannot hear me. No,
No,
not.
I think it's fine. You have to know that if you go onto another program by accident or anything, or something comes to the computer, Skype still carries on, even if you can't see the screen. So it's fine. I mean, I can hear you. It's fine. I've no problem.
Okay, thank you.
Don't worry. Skype is great. Okay, so we've discovered that in order to understand the process that we're in, we need to consider creation's ultimate purpose. And we know the creation's ultimate purpose because the tzaddikim were able to tell it to us. And that's why we need their teaching in order to come to God. We can't do it on our own. All right? He goes on to discuss, Leah, I'm on page 37, paragraph 4. Okay. It is clear that we're not dealing with a creator who created the world without a purpose. Only someone who had taken leave of their senses could conceive of a creator who had no purpose in his creation. From the fact that we ourselves work and create with a purpose, we can extrapolate that our creator, who is our source and our root, certainly does. I know that there are certain self-styled wise men who do not follow the path of Torah, who say that God created the whole of reality but left it to its own devices, seeing that the created beings, being so worthless, were not fitting for such an exalted creator to oversee their petty and despicable ways. What they say is nonsense. It would not be reasonable to assert that we are petty and worthless unless we had already concluded that we had created ourselves with all our defective and despicable tendencies. If we think about it, we said last time, or we said on the previous lesson, that God is the perfect creator, and therefore we have to be perfect beings. I mean, so the only way that we could be as petty and as worthless as we often feel we are is if we had created ourselves. And since we obviously didn't, then this is just an illusion that we are so worthless. This is not real. We are actually so valuable. This is so important. Yeah.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Idida, the free will which we have, how this free will and the God overseeing and being intimately a part of our life coincides together?
Well, the truth of the matter is that God is part of our lives intimately, but he's hidden. The Hebrew word for a world is olam, which is ayin vav lamed mem. And the Hebrew word for hidden is the same. It's the same word. And the world hides God, and God is hidden from us for as long as we are ourselves not turning to him. So it's very possible for people to live a life which is very, very disconnected from God and very unaware of the role that God's playing in their lives, because it's like they turn their back on him. But not necessarily deliberately. It can be quite unconscious. So the role that God plays in our lives is not necessarily known to us. And the knowledge comes only when we begin to really look for him. When we really begin to search for him, when we begin to look for him, then we begin to see that he's been there all the time.
What's the Hebrew word again? You got it from hidden?
Okay, so the word olam is ayin vav lamed mem.
Uh-huh.
And the word for hidden is ayin lamed mem.
Uh-huh.
So it's the same root. It's exactly the same root. It's uh-huh. amazing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, so God hides himself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we just don't look.
That's
Yeah?
Okay.
That's very interesting.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the question is that, you know, there was once a chassid came to the Rabbi of Potsk. Rabbi of Potsk was a great tzaddik, Vita. There was many tzaddikim who lived in Poland and Russia. Part of the Hasidic movement, and one time somebody said to him, "Where is God?" And he said, "Well, God is where you let him in." And it's true. It's when we open to the possibility of the Creator as being part of our lives and as being intimate in our lives, we find that he's been there all the time.
Don't know why we needed a buy. I mean, we have here a million of pens. There's a box of old pens. Don't know why we need a buy.
Okay. Leo over there?
Yeah, he
yes.
Okay. We can hear your kids talking to you. So
please check it, please.
If you want, Leia, you can turn off your microphone. If you want to know how to do that,
yep.
So that if they're there and they're bothering, what you can do is you take your mouse and you see on the screen there's four icons at the bottom in a row. Okay, move your mouse towards the bottom of the screen and you'll see some icons. And one of them is a picture of a microphone. And if you put your mouse onto that picture, and it should say mute your microphone, and you click on that, and then every time that the kids are there...
Didier, can you hear me? I did it. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Very good. And then that way, you know, the kids are there, but when you want to speak, obviously you want to ask a question, then just unmute it and we'll hear you. No problem. Okay. But from the moment... Okay, so then we said we do often consider ourselves as being worthless or feel that we are petty. But Rabbi Ashlak is questioning this. Are we really petty and worthless? Who decides this? Only an incompetent creator would or could create worthless objects. If we decide we are worthless, then maybe the creator is incompetent. But there is another possibility. But from the moment we decide that the creator who is perfect beyond all perfection is the craftsman who created and planned our bodies with all their positive and negative tendencies, then we also have to say that from a perfect worker, an imperfect or defective work can never ensue. And this implies that we are actually perfect created beings, and certainly not defective as we so often seem. So we often feel, you know, that we're not okay, that we're not, we're, you know, that either the way we behave or the way that we feel or we get depressed, or we get upset, or we get physically ill, or so we say, you know, God, why did you create me like this? You know, why did you create me all these problems, all these difficulties, all these things that go wrong? Then we actually have to say that, you know, it says God is the perfect creator. We have to be perfect. And therefore, it's the way we're judging things that is wrong. It's not what the way things really are. It's our judgment isn't right. We're seeing things wrong. There's a sort of a discussion about this in the Talmud, which is very interesting. And this is what Rabbi Ashlag brings here. Every work testifies the quality of its maker. What blame may be attached to a shoddily made garment if an incompetent tailor sewed it? The story is told in the Talmud of Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, who chanced to meet an extremely ugly man. He said to the man, "How ugly you are! Tell the craftsman who made me, how ugly is the vessel you have made," replied the man. In other words, the full responsibility for the way the creation is ultimately has to fall only on God. Okay, he's the creator, and the way it is his responsibility. It's a very powerful statement. And very different from the way we've all been brought up. Here follows the full excerpt from the Talmud. It happened that Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon, was coming from the study house of his teacher at Migdal Gadud. He was riding on his donkey, wandering by the side of the river and feeling a great happiness. He was feeling pleased with himself because he'd learnt a lot of Torah. He happened to meet an extremely ugly man who addressed him. "Greetings, Rabbi." But Rabbi Elazar did not reply. Rabbi Elazar said, "Ignorant man, how ugly you are. Maybe all the citizens of your town are as ugly as you." The man replied, "I do not know, but go and tell the craftsman who made me how ugly the vessel is that he made." Since he knew for himself that he had sinned, Rabbi Elazar got down from his donkey and prostrated himself before the man and said, "I apologize, please forgive me." The man said to him, "I shall not forgive you until you go to the craftsman who made me and say to him, how ugly is the vessel that you made." I had a teaching on this story from Rabbi Gottlieb, who says that you can actually imagine everything happening inside one person, okay? So we inside ourselves, we've got Rabbi Elazar, and inside the person we've got Rabbi Elazar, and inside ourselves we've also got the ugly man, okay? So you know, it's like we're saying to ourselves, you know, "Oh, you know, you've got this ugly part inside of you." Okay? Which you could call the ego, or you could call the evil inclination, or you could call it the will to receive yourself alone, whichever way you want to call it. Okay? And basically the man says, you know, and you say to yourself, "Oh, you know, you do this bad, you do that bad, you do this wrong, you do that wrong." And this part is saying to us, you know, "Go and tell the craftsman who made me how ugly is the vessel that you made." In other words, ultimately, all the way we are is all our creation comes from the Creator. He created us this way, and ultimately, He is responsible for who we are. And this is an amazing, amazing change in ourselves. Okay. One second. Yeah. Bachar wants something. Yeah.
The parcel is supposed to come.
Oh, when now?
That one, yeah.
Okay. Answer it. Can you deal with it for me? I think he's in the street, Bachar. Okay. Sorry. There's a parcel coming. In telling this story from the Talmud, Rabbi Ashlag is emphasizing that the responsibility for the product rests on the creator who made it. Therefore, the responsibility for the outcome of the creation and the quality of the created beings rests entirely on the creator. Okay, sorry, one second. There's a courier with a parcel. Okay, I'm back. Vita, you still there?
Yes, yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm fine. Very good.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Okay, now no Leia's there because I can see, so that's fine. All right, lovely. Now, Leia, anytime you want to ask a question, you just unmute your microphone and we're here for you, no problem. Okay, so that's an amazing story, I think, that, you know, it's so honest, it's so open, it's so very different. I don't know how you guys got brought up, but I got brought up like, if you didn't do this and if you didn't do that, you know, you weren't any good. And this was like, so when I learned this, I was like, it really changed, you know, helped me change my life. Philosophers who claim that it's due to our own lack of worth and insignificance, that it was not fitting for God to watch over us, and so God abandoned us, only publicize their own ignorance. If you were to meet a person who could invent new created beings just so they should suffer and experience pain throughout their lives as we do, and not only that, but who would then discard them as worthless without even wanting to supervise them in order to help them a little, wouldn't you despise such a person? Is it possible even to consider such a thing about God?
Yes, this is true. This is absolutely true.
Right.
And there are people in our life who, for instance, if children are not behaving, especially when they get older, some people basically close their relationship with children. And I can never understand this.
Mm.
So this statement really is kind of very close to my understanding of life. True.
It's true, isn't it? It's
yes.
Yeah, it's really,
it's true.
Yeah.
So
of course you help your children no matter what.
No matter what, it doesn't matter. I mean, because kind of we feel the responsibility when we work with something, and not only children, even when we produce something, for instance, when I'm working, I'm producing an application, I'm a software engineer. So until I have some power over it, I always strive to make it better and more perfect. And I feel the responsibility. I feel the great responsibility. And I believe that, yes, if you believe that the Creator is perfect and there cannot be any other thought about Creator, when it's impossible to think that we were completely unattained after we were created.
Yeah. That is, I really like what you say about the feeling of responsibility, because, you know, like, we all do that. I mean, when I give a class, when I know Leia, when you give a class, when I'm doing my translation, like, I'm always striving to get it as best as I can, and I take responsibility for it, and that, you know, and if it didn't go well, or, you know, then I want to correct it for the next time. I want to see where I went wrong. So if I care about, you know, things like that, so. Obviously, the Creator cares. There's no such thing that He doesn't care. And yet, you know, when you are faced with the reality of the suffering, these are not easy matters. I was reading two biographies recently of two very great, well, I think great people who were brothers, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau and his older brother Naftali Lau, who both went through the Holocaust together. Rabbi Yisrael Lau was only a child of about 6 years old, and his brother Naftali saved him. And they were actually both in Buchenwald together. And how Naftali's older brother saved the younger one is just an incredible story. I mean, again and again and again. I mean, he risked his life countless times to save his little brother. And the story is amazing. And you see the books written from two very different perspectives, because, of course, Yisrael Lau was a child and he saw it from his perspective, and Naftali was much older. He was a young man of about 16, 17 years old. And Naftali discusses in his book how difficult it was to retain his faith in God during this period. He's very honest about it. And also, if you read the writings of the Rabbi of Piasecznia, who was a rabbi, the last rabbi of the Warsaw Ghetto, there is writings which he wrote actually in the Warsaw Ghetto of drashot, talks he gave to his congregation, actually during these periods of 1942, 1943. I think there were 3 years in which his writings were preserved. Maybe it was 40, 41 or 42. I don't remember. Then, of course, he was murdered like everybody else. And he hid his writings in a milk churn. And they were discovered in 1950. They were dug up and discovered. And they have been preserved. And we have them. And again, he doesn't find it easy. He has tremendous faith in God, that somehow God is responsible, that God is doing what needs happening. And yet at the same time, the faith in God is not easy. And yet what's really amazing to me is the question, but also the fact that so many people in the Holocaust actually did retain faith. It was really amazing. This is the incredible. There are incredible stories of real faith in God, in what is right and just, in the worst of circumstances. So, on the one hand, you know, we can say, well, you know, when we are sitting in a comfortable study in the to say, well, you know, the way God's actions appear and the way that he really is good and he does good, and to have faith and to say that in one thing, but to actually read of people who really lived that in the worst of circumstances is, to me, incredible inspiration. I think these books are available in English. I'll find them for you and you can read them. They're incredible, incredible documents.
Thank you. Please send them to me in the email.
Yeah, I'll give you the references. I think you can find them on Amazon. They are very, I think they are fascinating documents of human belief and faith in God as the ultimate good. And at the same time, not brushing over the true difficulties of such a faith in these times.
I believe there is no choice. I mean, for people who strive to love and who believe that love is the only constructive force in the universe, and it's an inner part of us. It's just a part of us. There is no choice.
That's amazing thought. I think you must be right, Vita. I mean, to come to love, true unconditional love, I think is only possible with faith in God. I think you're right. There is no choice then. That has to be the path.
And this is how I feel. I cannot prove it. I just feel it.
I think you're amazing, actually. You're absolutely right. I mean, the Zohar corroborates you, because it says the first and fundamental of all the mitzvot, which is the commandments, the ways of coming to God, is actually faith. It's actually, it's called Yirat Hashem, but it's the gateway to faith. It means I'm not wanting to do anything that will separate me from God. And it is called faith. And in order to come to the love of God, you have to have faith first. So that is an amazing, amazing understanding that you have. Wow. Yishar koach. Leah, are you okay there? You're terrible silent.
No, I'm listening. I'm just listening. I'm just in a listening mood today.
I haven't
had a question yet. I'm just hearing, but also some of the stuff I've read before.
I know.
So it's just revision. I'm just letting it in. I'm not.
I agree with you, and at the same time, you know, it's like each time it hits me again. You know how dramatic this is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so let's do number 5. So common sense dictates that we understand the opposite of what appears superficially to be the case. We are actually extremely good and supremely high beings, to the extent that there is no limit to our importance. We are entirely fitting creations for the craftsman who made us. Any lack that you might like to raise concerning our bodies, after all the excuses one might make, must fall squarely on the Creator who created us. He created us together with all our tendencies. It is clear that God made us and we did not make ourselves. He also knows all the processes that are consequent on our nature and on the evil tendencies he planted within us. This paragraph contains 2 very important points. The first testifies to our real self-worth. And the second relates to the Creator as a perfect Creator who knows all the tendencies that he planted within us and all their consequences. We are actually extremely good and supremely high beings, to the extent that there is no limit to our importance. We are entirely fitting creations for the craftsman who made us. That's amazing. I mean, you need to write this out and stick it on your fridge. Because if we were really to internalize this sentence, our lives would change so much. I mean, instead of like beating ourselves up the whole time, we would actually rise to the occasion. I mean, there is nothing like appreciation to make a person want to do even better. And when we really see that we have so much potential, we have so much possibility, we are good and supremely high beings, we are entirely fitting creations for the craftsman who made us. This is an amazing statement. It makes you want to go off and, you know, do whatever you can to help God straight away. Do you know what I mean? It's an amazing way to look at ourselves. And, okay, It says, any lack that you might like to raise concerning our bodies, after all the excuses one might make, must fall squarely on the Creator who created us. He created us together with all our tendencies. It's clear that God made us and we did not make ourselves. He also knows all the processes that are consequent on our nature and on the evil tendencies he planted within us. Well, yes, that's true. So we've got work to do. We've got something to overcome. Those evil tendencies were put there for a purpose, which we will find out about in lesson four, I think it is. I think it's in lesson four. I can't remember. Well, soon anyhow. But so it's not a mistake. It's not a mistake that we've got negative aspects to ourselves. Nothing happened by accident. Nothing went wrong. It's just that because we are such good, such high, such beautiful, incredible human beings, God gave us actually a very important role to play. He gave us a very important job to do. I mean, you know, if you're running a firm, okay, a company, and you're making a product, okay, the most difficult and the most important part of the work, you don't give it to the lady who comes around and collects the coffee cups. Okay, you give it to the person who's actually got the abilities and the tremendous potential to actually be able to do the work. Okay, you give it to the most appropriate person. Now, it so happens that when God created the world, he gave the human being the most important and the most difficult of all the jobs, of all the aspects of the work to do. Okay, our role in creation is much harder than that of the angels. There's a beautiful midrash. I'm sure you know this, Leah. A midrash, Vita, is a parable. It's like a mm-hmm. teaching parable, which the sages use to illustrate a particular point, and they occur in parts of the Talmud and in separate collections of as well. They are considered as part of the Torah, as part of the light of the Torah. And they have a little, and they have a sort of symbolic language. They're not meant to be taken literally. So there's a very beautiful midrash of when Moses went up on Mount Sinai to collect the Torah. The angels got rather annoyed. And they said to God, what's this human being doing up here? And God said, well, he's come to collect my Torah. And they said, what, you want to give your precious gift to a man born of a woman? You know, flesh and blood? This is, you know, what for? So God said to Moses, answer them. So Moses said to them, do you have jealousy? Do you have a tendency to murder people? Do you get angry? Do you have a father and a mother? He said, we need what's written in it. We have to do this work of overcoming these tendencies. We have jealousy. We have tendencies to murder. We have a father and a mother we need to honor. So therefore, we need the Torah. And so God gave, and he justified it, and God gave the human, God gave Moses the Torah. So we see from this story that we have a work to do, which is even greater than that of the angels. The angels, the Zohar teaches us, the angels do God's will. There is nothing that separates between ourselves, between the angel and God's will. God thinks and the angel does it. But he has no choice. He has nothing to disturb him in his mission. He doesn't have to think about it. God straight away, God thinks and the angel does his will, just like that. But a human being, a soul of a human, has the positive side and the negative side. He's got to overcome himself. He's got to work on himself. He's got to deal with himself. He's got to deal with his negative sides of himself. And therefore, we need the Torah to help us. So even the fact that we have negative tendencies within ourselves is not an accident. It's meant to be this way. Okay. Okay, so all the bits in between we more or less covered. If we do paragraph 5 continued, it goes on, it's on page 40, middle of the page. But as we have said, we must look to the end of the process of creation, and then we should be able to understand it all. There's a proverb that says, do not show your work to a fool while you're still in the middle of it. We've seen that considering something that is in process without knowing its ultimate aim is problematic, to say the least. Unless we know the purpose of the creation, we can and do quite easily misunderstand God's intentions and his actions towards us and towards the rest of the creation. And I think equally important, we also do not understand ourselves correctly and we misjudge our own qualities. Our defective tendencies belong to the process of creation rather than to its ultimate aim. So therefore, we can infer that God really is the perfect craftsman and we are his perfect created beings. It's just that we are within the process of creation and we are not yet, at least in our everyday consciousness, at its superb finish. Okay? So the fact that we have positive, the negative parts within us as part of the process of creation, ultimately, they will be transformed. I have a wonderful story about this that I read in a very good book called Kitchen Table Wisdom, by a woman called Rachel Naomi Remen, an amazing book and full of lovely teaching stories. And there's a story in there of a woman who, I should say, I'm sorry, Rachel Naomi Remen is a doctor and she works with cancer patients looking for ways of healing, mostly through listening and counselling. She was one of the pioneers of sort of like the new age approach to cancer. And one of the stories is of a woman who was alcoholic. And she was talking to Rachel. And she said, she used to sort of like descend into her alcoholism, and her alcoholism was like a black pit swallowing her up. And when she would sort of like get, you know, one of these alcoholic binges or whatever, she felt like very, very swallowed up by this whole thing, which kind of like felt like she was taking over. And gradually she began to look at it slightly differently. And one day she asked herself, what if there is a reason for this? What if there is some spark of goodness in that alcoholic blackness which only I can rescue? Maybe because I have been an alcoholic, because I have been in that place, there is some spark of goodness which is there waiting for me to pick it up and bring it out with me. I think that's an amazing story. It's how somebody saw light within her own dark. She saw a purpose within the own darkness that was within her.
And how did it transform her life, that thought?
Well, I guess it must have done. I mean, I don't remember the whole story, but she obviously was somebody who was looking for help and wanting to move out of that, because she came to Rachel Naomi for healing. How does it transform you? There's another story in that book which I think addresses the transformation aspect. How did it transform? I think first of all, it gave her self-respect. That's the first thing. She no longer felt that she was like pulled into the alcoholism in that same way. She understood there was a purpose. And I think like understanding there was a purpose is a very great a step on the way to healing. That's the first thing. And I think there was another story which also strikes me. There was a woman called Jane, was extremely, extremely, extremely shy. Extremely, extremely, extremely timid. Everything frightened her. And she married a very calm, capable, loving husband called Bob, who was basically her support. And then Bob got cancer of the pancreas. And cancer of the pancreas is a very bad one because it usually it's discovered very late. And by the time they've discovered it, it's too late to do anything. And within three, 4 weeks, you know, it's very quick usually. It's a couple of months maximum and they're gone. And everybody didn't know how Jane was going to manage. And despite her timidness and her shyness, she did manage. She kept the family together. She managed to make her living. She managed to support the family. And talking with her, Rachel asked her, how did she do it? And she said, Rachel, she said, you don't know how hard life was for me. She said, everything frightened me. Talking on the telephone frightened me. Answering the front door frightened me. She said, I had to overcome my fear for every single little thing and find my courage for every single little thing. And she said, so I guess, just like working with my courage in these small ways all the time meant that when it was really needed, I found it was there waiting for me. And I think that that was a very, very moving parable, a very beautiful story, because there she had this negative thing of being very, very shy, very timid, very unable to cope. And yet by overcoming herself in these small ways again and again and again, when she needed the positive strength of courage, it was there. So I see that, you know, there you see the transformation. Does that address your question, Rita?
Yes, yes, it does.
Yeah, it does for me as well. I mean, because when we have something negative about ourselves and we work to overcome it, we develop something very positive within ourselves, something very, very, very strong and positive. We might not even be aware of it until we're suddenly called on to use it. And it's actually, it's step by step. It's little by little. It's not by
doing. You should know you did hear the class. You know how I was really nervous about the class, teaching the class in the hotel?
Yeah. Yeah.
They loved it. They gave me so much. That was like, just relating to what you were saying, I had to overcome that side of me that says, oh, you know, what are they going to like? You know, all that negative feelings, you know.
Right.
And realize I just had to just go for it.
Wonderful.
I got such very good feedback. Very good feedback.
Oh, Leah, I'm so happy for you.
Yeah, that's great.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Do you know Leah teaches dance?
No, I didn't. But
Yeah.
Who's that?
Leah teaches dance. It's amazing.
It's dance improvisation, which is a bit different.
Dance improvisation. I need to come to one of your classes, Leah.
It's not modern dance. Dance improvisation. It's finding the inner dance, the inner God in you, basically.
Oh my gosh.
So I was worried because, you know, it's like women I didn't even know, and I'm going to throw myself through this stuff, and they're going to like run the other way. But they drank it up. They so needed it. They were on fire. They really loved it. They asked me to come again and again. I was the only one who asked that because they really, really needed to express and let it out. And that's what I gave them, that opportunity. So Hashem gave me the tools to give them the opportunity.
That's amazing. That's
really, really, it's very really amazing. So it's very like to deal with. I was 20 people I've never met before. Usually I know the people. It's a course in Svart, small town girl. So I had to overcome my fears of suddenly being in the big city with a whole lot of people. And it was like I was nervous, but I thought, no, it's going to be okay. And it was very good. Yeah. But yeah, it's wonderful. It's different. Jerusalem people are different from Svart, I tell you what.
It's very,
Yeah,
I think that must be really the case. I'm also, I've got a big meeting tomorrow that I'm very nervous about. I'll just share it with you. I've not shared it with anybody else. I've got a meeting with 12 rabbis.
Wow.
I know.
Wow, you did hear that. 12 rabbis. Nice rabbis?
What? Oh, wow. 12 rabbis who want to learn something about the Zohar.
Amazing. It's about time. This is...
I mean, so this is like incredible. This is Days of Mashiach, that they, you know, that they don't mind I'm a woman.
Yeah.
I mean, and a woman teaching Zohar, Kabbalah, you know, to rabbis is just like...
That's radical. It's radical.
Yeah,
how did they find out about you? What happened?
I think it's an accident, tell you the truth. I think what happened was the guy who would normally have taken this is in Chutz La'aretz. And so he said, look, the only person I know who could do this for you is Yedida. So they're going to be in Sfat. So, and since I'm in Sfat, so, it, you know, they contacted me, which is really amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they're Tatili or me, you know, knitted kippah. So they're not, you know, not the long beard type, but still, it's still really, really, really radical.
That's amazing. I'm so happy for you, Yedida.
Wow. I am so happy to hear this, Yedida. I wish you all the strength. I wish you.
I can't. I'm Leah. I'm just like you. I'm like freaking out.
Yeah, I know. That's how
I feel. At the same time, I'm like kind of excited and hopeful, and basically just relying on Rabbi Ashlag that he's going to carry me through. Mm. Because this is exactly what I'm going to say to them. I'm going to say, you know, you're going to have to leave behind your intellectual abilities because, you know, they're all going to be brilliant in Gemara and stuff like that. I said, you're going to have to leave all that behind and you're going to have to relate to this from something very much inner.
Yeah, you know? Wow. That's tough. And actually, I find the Knit Kippah people much more intellectual than the Haridim.
This is true. Yes, they
much
are.
Much more. And when they have Shiurim, I find that I don't enjoy this as much as when I hear Haridim rabbis because they're much small, speak slower and softer and they get into the feeling.
Absolutely, and these are very, very, very intellectual people.
I know.
They're very intellectual. They're very, very, very much on their intellect, and I'm going to have to get them to
do something. Get them dancing, Yedida. Get them a few dance. Get moving. Let's do a few exercises before you sit down. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what we're going to have to do. I mean, he's already warned me. The guy in charge has already warned me. He said that, you know, they're very intellectual. They're going to ask all these questions, you know.
I'll be so happy next week when you tell me how it went. That's hilarious.
Bezwa Hashem.
Oh, that's amazing.
You know, and I did have, you know, I had the temptation of like I could just have loads of material there. And then I thought, no, I mustn't get into that trap.
Yeah, just be yourself.
I just have to be myself and I just have to teach as the way I normally teach, which is slowly and carefully and going into the feeling, into what it means.
Wow.
And so God should only help me tomorrow.
people only give you people that you need.
It's really...
Yedida, you have to know, and you probably know, that the light emanates from you, and they will definitely be able to resonate with this. There is no doubt in my heart that they will resonate with this, and that and you will be very successful. I don't have any doubt about that.
Bezrat Hashem.
Do you know this woman?
Bezrat Hashem. I'm really davening that God should... I want it to work, and it's not so much for me I want it to work, but I want God to help open their hearts for them.
right.
Because they are rabbis who teach young people. They are Ramim of Yeshivat Hesder. And, you know, that means that they are teachers they teach young people, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds. They can make such a difference to people's lives. So, you know, I'm really davening that this should work, because I'm really praying that this should work, so that God should open their hearts and so that they can be open to their students.
By the way, have you met this woman, heard of this woman, Arit Reiter?
Who?
Arit Reiter.
No, who's she?
Anyway, at this Kate and I went to, she was amazing. She's the only one who speaks similar to you. And she wrote a book, I'll show it to you, 180 Degrees Turnaround, Working on Emunah. And she talks very similar to you, and she loved what I did. And and she wrote an amazing book, and it took every day, and it's really, she's gone the same wavelength as you in many ways. Wow. And amazing stuff. So, but it's a different, like, you know, I wanted to show you the book. It's
What is her name? Orit Esther Reiter?
No, Orit Reiter. Orit and Reiter, R-I-T-E-R. She used to be a chef, then she got MS, and she got into writing this book about Emunah.
So, oh, my gosh, yeah, I found her. Here we go. Author of The Daily Dose of Emunah.
Yes, she's an amazing woman, and she was there, and I bought her book. And it's an amazing book, and it's very much in tune with what you're saying. I really recommend it as a kind of a way of people, as an extra book reference.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And she's amazing.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she's good. She brings a lot of Kabbalah in there and has to do a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Super.
And she told me she wants me to come to Jerusalem and do something with her. Could you believe this author?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I was so impressed with that. Yeah. It's Rath Hashem.
Amazing.
And do you notice that every time you want to do something very, very bad and important in your life, that you get sick or something? I had such a sore throat. I was sick for so many days. I was like, just before, it's like the Yetzirah, it's like before Shabbat, when you want to really know that you're doing something important in your life. It's like Yom Shishi, you have this something happens, you know?
Yeah.
You notice that?
Yeah, definitely.
So then I knew I was on the right track, okay? I've got a sore throat, I'm feeling bad. Obviously, this is the way. I'm breaking through something here.
Right. Yeah. Very much so.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know, you notice if you're getting a headache or getting sick before the lecture.
I can resonate with that one.
Yeah.
All right, my dears, that was a wonderful, wonderful class. I'm glad you made it, Leah. You learned about Skype. You're doing it. You're managing.
I know. I just have to remember the time, because it's like that around 2 o'clock is the time where I go, oh, okay, I need to sleep, and it's like, oh no, I have to get up. You know, it's half a body clock.
I'm sorry if the timing's not so great for you, but I can't manage later.
Uh-huh.
Neither can Sippy. Sippy, I don't know where Sippy was today. Uh-huh. I can't manage later, and Sippy can't manage later, and it's just like the time that we really, it's like the time that we actually all manage to be together.
All right,
so I mean, like, we can't really move it, sweetie. I understand your feeling.
I just have to get my body clock into it, ready into it. Yeah.
That's right. Maybe I should, you know, remember to give you a call at 1 o'clock.
Can you give me at 1 o'clock? Because that gives me a bit more time to orientate myself.
I'll try and do that.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. I love you both. I love you both.
I love you too.
You did it. Where are you going the Chai Chi?
I'm going, not tomorrow because of this class I'm teaching. I'll be there probably Wednesday. I'll be there definitely Wednesday. But you can go anytime. She's mostly there.
Wednesday, what time?
I'm going there like 5 o'clock.
All right. Okay. All right. I'll try. I'll get it to you. I'll give it to her. I'll give it to you something. Okay.
Yeah. No problem. No worries, love.
All right, love.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.